Daydreaming about dragons, thinking about first and third person as tools to communicate in the gaming, in the great conversation that is gaming. When do you use first person? When do you use third? Do you prefer one over the other? I got thinking about this for a couple of reasons. One, my friend Drew invited me into a Facebook conversation, which was super cool. I love being summoned into conversations like that. And we had a kind of a discussion about that amongst a couple of gamers. I've been watching a lot of streaming lately. Not a lot, but some. I've been watching the new Critical Role, Exandria Unlimited. I'll put a link in the show notes. And Black Dice Society, which is set in Ravenloft. Again, I'll put a link in the show notes if that's your thing. And if not, you'll still understand what the heck I'm talking about. I'm not going to delve too deep into any particular lore of any of those shows. But those things in particular got me thinking about when do you say I jump in the midst of the evil knights and slash them with my sword, and when do you say my character, he jumps into the midst of the evil knights and he slashes them with his sword? And it's a kind of a big difference. It's kind of a huge difference. And it's an interesting thing to think about. And I think there are reasons there are good reasons that you can go back and forth and not think about it at all. But as a tool, there are interesting reasons to use one over the other. And so that's what we're going to be thinking about today. So one of the times I first started thinking about this was when I would have NPCs write letters to characters. And you know, I've got a really clear topic, first person and third person. So let's muddy the water a little bit. I don't want to be too clear. Let's make this a little bit difficult to parse. One way to write letters is to go through and find a good font. That's the NPC's handwriting. And you go through. You know, there are tons of free fonts online, especially if you're just sharing it amongst your friends. And I love fonts and I love layout, but that's not necessarily where I'm at. Although I did just write a invitation from Count Strahd von Zarevich to the players, and I totally font geeked out a little bit. I wanted something that clearly looked handwriting, but wasn't too hard to read. Anyway, I'm getting way off topic. Let's get back. The other way you can do this is just write in your normal font. Whatever it is, Times New Roman, and you describe the handwriting. And that way you can tell the player what their character picks up on from it. This character, you know, the handwriting is the neat artistry of someone who is clearly classically trained by tutors from ancient Lemuria. Boom. Now now that player knows something about the NPC who wrote this letter. The handwriting for this letter looks like a spider wet its appendages in ink and then crawled across the page. Now they know something else about the character. The handwriting is so neatly spaced that it's clear that whoever wrote it is used to writing accounting ledgers. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So one is first person, right? Here's the letter. You know, here's the writing. Judge it as you will. And then the other one is third person, right? My warrior, he does this. And so that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about here. I definitely do some line delivery in first person, right? I like a little touch of acting in my NPC GMing. And in my role-playing in general as a player. But I do love describing things. Because you can say things, you can describe things about the character, about an NPC, that the character would have picked up on that the player might not. Right? You can say things like, you know, from the way this person moves their hands, you can tell that they trained once to be a wizard. And whether they became a wizard or they didn't, who knows? But they clearly were working on those somatic hand components. Somatic? Is somatic Somatic is, no, verbal. Verbal and somatic. Yeah, somatic components. I had it right. You know, if it's a fighter, you could say, oh, the way this person moves their feet, you know that they're trained. The way that they hold themselves, the way that they have their sword buckled for an easy draw, you know, the way they have their sword buckled behind them lets you know that they have no intention of drawing it and they think their bodyguards have got their back or that they're very safe here. So by stepping outside of first person and using third person, you can describe things about the about these NPCs. But of course, you can go back and forth. You don't have to be a first person. You don't have to make it part of your identity. It doesn't have to be, oh, I'm a first person person or I'm a third person. There might be different tables that do things different ways. I've had friends who have told me, you know, I've been to a table and I started, you know, doing my character with a funny voice and everyone looked at me like I was a jerk and they got really uncomfortable. They didn't like it. Whereas other people, you know, you're in a D&D group with a bunch of actors. Suddenly everybody's doing a voice. And if you back off to they them, that's what they're doing. That's what, you know, it might not work. So it might be the table that dictates. I would hope that the gaming culture would be cool enough where you can switch it out. And you know, if your character is having a good sob, you don't have to have a good sob because that's exhausting. Some people don't want to do that. Some people live for it, and they really like it. But I guess what I want to get me clear is that these different approaches aren't one isn't necessarily better than the other. There's not a superior way to do it. They're just different tools. And as always, if you name your tools in the toolbox when you need to reach for them, they're easier to find. And so you can move back and forth. Maybe you switch into the first person when it's kind of an intimate, small scene. Maybe we switch into the third when it's something big and sweeping and there's a lot of moving parts, right? We've talked about, you know, a GM presenting like a crowded room or a party. That might be a time to really rock the they, them, because there's too much to act. You know, you can't just act like 1,000 people in a crowded room. At that point, you have to really start, you know, you have to start naming people and letting people know what they're seeing and what they're feeling and what they're hearing. Little snippets. Snippets of conversation. And that's a trick I learned from Play by Post. I think I mentioned that when I talked about, you know, running games with big parties is just having little snippets of conversations that the players are picking up on. And that way they can veer themselves towards those conversations and get involved with what interests them. And another lens with which to look at this is one, you know, the first person where you're acting as the NPC is more of like an actor, and the they, them can be looked at as more of an author. And I feel like that's fraught, right? Whenever we start talking about, there are certain words and certain ways of talking about gaming that make me nervous, because as a subculture, our discourse on it has been hazy and difficult to comprehend. So whenever anyone uses the word story, I have to clarify. What does that mean to you? Right? Because to me, the story is what happens in the game. That's the story. But to some people, it's the GM's plans. And so like when I use the word author and I use the word actor, it makes me nervous. Which is why I'd much rather use, you know, first person and third person. Also, probably because I'm an English major. So there's that. But throwing writing words in there, you know, even using the word author, makes me super nervous. So take that with a grain of salt. But it might help you to think about it. Do I want to be an actor right now? Or do I want to be a writer? If that helps, great. And if it doesn't, and if it just muddies the waters, ignore these last 2 minutes and move the heck on. To sum up, to just wrap it all up in a bow, you can, as a GM, as a player, you can describe your characters, your character or characters, in using first person, I do this, I'm going to do that, or third person, they do this, they do that, he, she, it does this. And neither one is superior to the other, but they have very different effects. Very different effects. I've started backing out and using third person when a character starts like yelling and screaming or cusses someone out, particularly if they say something sexist. I just don't want to do it. And I don't want to put my friends through that. I don't want to cuss at my friends. It's just not interesting to me. So I'll say they say something really filthy about your mom. And in a way, that's worse because it just lets the player's imaginations run wild. And I've done that. I don't like doing it all that often, but some, you know, having that type of thing happen. But if someone's going to say something really awful, you can just say they say something really awful. You can literally say that. You do not need to cuss at your friends. Now, if you are in agreement with everybody and everyone's like, hey, let's bring it. Let's bring the acting. Let's bring some intensity. I want some, you know, intense yelling and screaming here. Then great. If that's your agreement, go for it. It is not my agreement, and it's not why I'm sitting down to game. So I like to just, hey, you know, yep, you capture the evil person, and they say heinous things about your parentage. Just disgusting things about your parentage and, you know, certain animals that scavenge the dead and the relations they have in barns. And that's all you have to say. And it's pretty awful. Like, you know, and the end. The end. So I think that's a use of the third person, is you can get some distance and you can describe something in a way that is less confrontational and less brutal than, you know, I am here and I am screaming at you. And we started off the game talking about different streams I've been watching. And one of the things, one of the warnings that they have in the beginning of Black Dice Society is the, you know, the GM, B. Dave Walters, says, we are going to, you know, there might be yelling and screaming. And if that's going to upset you, then, you know, this is a horror game. There might be, you know, I might raise my voice a bit. And it's cool to think of a warning. You know, it's really cool. And that's a conversation worth having. Because some people, it might take them out of it. Other people, they don't want to get yelled at. You know, I've had jobs where I get yelled at a lot. And it's not fun. And I definitely don't want to, like, come home and get yelled at again. So, at a game that I'm supposed to be enjoying. So, yeah, I would tap out. Hey, please stop. But, you know, you don't have to stop yelling. You don't have to stop the NPC. The NPC doesn't have to stop yelling. The fiction doesn't have to stop yelling. It's just you as a human being sitting across the table from me. Please stop yelling. So there it is. That's one use. There are many others. It's good stuff. I think there's a lot of fruitful tools to be teased out here. And I feel like I don't hear a lot of conversation about it. And so I'm bringing it up. A lot of this stuff has been brought up before. So if there's been repetition, I'm very sorry. And it's fun. It's been it's an interesting topic, and I think there's a lot more to be said. So we'll probably come back to this. we'll come back to it. And if you have some thoughts on when you use third person and when you use first, I would love to hear about it. When do you drop into, when do you drop right into the character and say that I'm doing it? And when do you take a step back? I'd love to hear from you. But first, let's get to the Inspiration Goat. See what they're bleeding about. Wildermyth is a video game by World Walker Games, and it is really, really cool. It's a party-based RPG. What are some other tags for it? It's turn-based, so if you're playing it and you need to stop, you can just hit save, and it'll bring you right back to that turn, which I love. It reminds me a bit of Darkest Dungeons, but it has like a storybook vibe to it, rather than going for some kind of dark, catonic, Lovecraftian vibe. And it doesn't have a narrator, so it doesn't have that. It has nice, chirpy music. It isn't saying the terrible things about humanity that Darkest Dungeons is saying. And I don't even mean the catonic monsters or people, you know, having, you know, trafficking with otherworldly beings. The most vicious part of Darkest Dungeons, we'll get back to Wildermyth in a little bit, in a moment, but I want to, like, I think showing what's different is important to me. The darkest moment in Darkest Dungeons is when a character is their mental health is a problem because of the way the game works, and they probably have physical problems because of the way the game works, and it's cheaper and it's smarter to get rid of them and train up a new character. And when you get rid of them, they just kind of disappear. But I have to imagine, because you've gone through all of these ordeals with this person. I usually rename them. Maybe that's a mistake. But I find that Darkest Dungeon is much more interesting when I rename them. But I don't rename my Wildermyth characters, which is interesting. We'll get to that in a moment. I have to imagine that character is just out on the street. You know, a broken person who is no longer welcomed among their adventurers. And that's dark. And Wildermyth doesn't have that. There is still darkness. People are still getting hurt and scarred and have PTSD and are wondering, you know, what am I going to do when this war is over? But there's a, I don't know, a positivity to it. You know? Even though I've got characters with you know, who are missing limbs and still out there fighting the good fight, there's just something positive about the way it's framed. And I like it. I like it better. It makes me feel better about people. And right now, today, in 2021, I need to feel better about people. And I like it. I like that aspect of it. It's the same. It's a very similar type of vibe, but you're not quite you're not gathering that many characters. I think the top, you have like seven, and you're wandering around and you know, stopping invasions of otherworldly beings with swords and spells. It's a good time. And what I want to talk about it is the generational aspect of it. That's the thing that I think is really interesting. There is this character named Anwit, and she is currently 63 years old, and she has two children who are also in the adventuring group that I, control, I guess, curate, and she's been with the group since she's 20. I saw her, she was like a second generation character. So the first generation of characters all either retired or perished. I think most of them retired. I think I had a really good run where like my first four characters all retired. And so they got to pass their experience onto the next generation, which actually helps. Like their experience points, you can choose like, hey, you know, who do they pass it on to? Which I think is super interesting. Super duper interesting. it's just a cool game mechanic. You know, the character is retiring and moving on, and you get to say, hey, who gets a little bit of an experience point bump because they pass on wisdom to them. So I remember her when she was just a scrappy young kid amongst a really successful party, and she just earned a name for herself, and now she's the elder person. And she's got like a streak of gray in her hair, and I love that turnaround. I love that change of role. It's something that I noticed in Trophy Gold when we were playing, where a new character came in, because a new player came in. A friend of mine, John, came and joined us. And when John joined us, his character was suddenly brand new, and all of the other characters had been adventuring for a long time. And then a couple people died, and a couple people retired, and we switched GMs for a game. So the other older character was out of play because Drew wasn't going to play him. He took him out of Circ, so to speak, to use library talk. And so suddenly, very suddenly, John's newbie rookie character, about four games in, is the experienced person that we're all looking to. And it was a really cool change of pace. And I really loved it. I loved seeing that change. And I feel like there's the other games where I've seen that kind of thing hinted at. Pendragon is the big one, right? Where you declare your heir. That's a big deal. And I feel like Houses of the Blooded had it a bit, right? Because getting married and having children was part of it. It was part of the game. I never quite played it that long, although I did have a character switch from playing the father to playing a son. Just because the father character wasn't working out. And we were like, just play your son. Play someone who's being brought up by this jerk sorcerer who whenever you play him, it's just terrible. And that was awesome. That change made all the difference. So I loved seeing it. I love seeing families in adventures. I love what it does for the fiction. I love what it's saying metaphorically. Right? When families are adventuring together and you know, throwing down evil and keeping their land safe, it's like this funk, even if it's not directly a metaphor or it's trying to be a metaphor, it's this funky metaphor for like, hey, family is an adventure. And I love that. So I've loved seeing this character, this awesome black woman go from being this young lady in the midst of all these, you know, really legendary adventurers, and then become a legendary adventurer on her own. And she's just great. She's just fantastic. She's got black raven's wings, and her hair has gotten real long, and it's in braids, and one of the braids is gray. She's just so damn cool. Wildermyth is really neat. I love how the characters age. I love how the characters look. The art is really cool. There's this feeling like you're moving paper miniatures around on a table when you go to combat, and I just adore it. I have nothing but good things to say about it. If you want a fun game, check it out. It's got a really really decent learning curve. It's not too difficult, and I just think it's fun as heck. You will wonder where your time went. And if you kind of like Darkest Dungeons, but you don't want that grind, Wildermyth might be the way to go. I think Wildermyth is a much more positive take on that type of adventure, and I love the rules choices they make. And I feel like there could be a whole show about how the rules choices between Darkest Dungeons and Wildermyth convey the world in a very different way. And how it does that. And how it talks about, how it's saying something about, you know, generational wisdom. And how to pass that on. Ugh, love it. Love it. It's also saying things about stories. Anyway, check out Wildermyth. It's absolutely lovely. And if you do, let me know what you think. Let me know what you would use to play a Wildermythy type of game. I feel like Trophy Gold would be pretty good. I feel like that would be a good core start. You know, we could futz around with a debt mechanic and change it to something else a little bit. But I feel like the core of it is there. Something to think about. All right. Let's get to the outro. Thank you for listening to Daydreaming About Dragons. If you would like to support the show, you can drop me an email at judd.karlman@gmail.com. You can tweet at me at InspirationGoat, all one word, InspirationGoat, just like it's spelled. And let me know what you thought of the show. Let me know what's going on in your mind, you know, what's going on at your table. What went across your mind while you were listening? What did it remind you of? I'd love to hear it. And there is also a way to support the show monetarily. That's always an option. You can, if you just want to like throw money at the show, but you want it to go to a good place, I've got a Threadless shop. So you can purchase an Inspiration Goat t-shirt, a Daydreaming About Dragons t-shirt, all other kinds of nerdy stuff. Check it out. There'll be a link to the Threadless shop in the show notes. I believe the link will take you to the Daydreaming About Dragons collection, but you can figure out your way around and get to other ones from there. And the final way, maybe the best way, maybe I should lead with this, is leave a review over on iTunes or whatever your podcasting app of choice is. If they allow for reviews, leave a review, and if they don't, go sign in over at iTunes and leave a review there. Let people know what they're getting into, what five-star glory they're getting into when they hit play on a Daydreaming About Dragons episode. All right? I hope you're doing all right. I hope you're masking up again. I hope you're staying safe. I hope you got some hugs in while the hugging was good. And I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Daydreaming About Dragons. I'm laughing because I just talked for 3 minutes and then I said, this sucks. And I erased it because it sucked. So I spared you. I spared you all those 3 minutes of just terrible content. So let's get to it. Today's tabletop tech, tabletop, oof, fucking A.